You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
The Pet Doctor is brought to you by Dog.com. For everything and anything dog, shop Dog.com today for all the top brands. Greenies, Frontline, Kong, Nylabone, Royal Canin, and more. Shop at Dog.com and use the promo code SADDOC, S-A-D-D-O-C, and get $15 off your order of $75 or more.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You've heard these warnings before. Don't swim for at least an hour after eating or you'll cramp up and you could drown. Don't cross your eyes, they'll get stuck that way. To prevent your dog from developing potentially life-threatening condition bloat and torsion, don't feed the dog that contains grains. Feed it from an elevated dish and keep it quiet for an hour after eating. Well, I haven't drowned yet, and my eyesight is okay. Dr. Kim Luce, a veterinarian whose primary focus is emergency and critical care medicine, will discuss the medical syndrome gastric, stomach, dilatation, and volvulus, swelling and twisting. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Isn't anything we won't do to make sure they're getting the best products and the best care. So when you ask us a question like,
so how do you feel about cat condos?
We can say from experience,
feels like home for her.
Enter the code DOCTOR10, D-O-C-T-O-R, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
Celebrate your special occasion and give her this classic semi-eternity band created with 1-carat brilliant diamonds, channel set in 14-carat white gold. Exclusively yours from ICE.com. Free shipping over $150, free returns, and 30-day money-back guarantee.
Go to ICE.com and use promo code ACTFP and get 20% off your purchase. Or use promo code ADTFP and get 20% off at Diamond.com. ICE.com or Diamond.com. Get 20% off from Pet Life Radio.
There's a movement afoot. ShoeBuy.com. Join the millions of people who shop ShoeBuy.com's over 400 brands and 500,000 products. Order now and get free shipping and free return shipping. ShoeBuy.com, the world's greatest shoe store.
Walk your dog in style and comfort. Enter the code DOCTOR, D-O-C-T-O-R, at checkout and get a 10% discount plus free shipping at ShoeBuy.com.
This year, Americans are expected to spend a jaw-dropping $36 billion on their pets. From lighted leashes to high-end spa products, the discriminating pet owner can find just about anything to pamper his or her pet. Hi, this is Michelle Fern. Join me every week for Best Bets for Pets, where we'll talk about the latest pet products and talk to the companies that make them. Best Bets for Pets, every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Luce, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, gastric dilatation volvulus. It sounds kind of, wow, really out there. And probably a lot of people, unless they own Dobermans, they seem to be a breed that everyone knows about this condition. How common is it?
Well, it is very common. And I think that the first thing that we should probably mention is that most people understand this syndrome by the term bloat. And it's not a medically accurate term for what we're discussing today. Bloat is merely the filling up and dilation of the stomach with air or gas. The concern becomes much more dire when the stomach then twists. And so the term gastric dilatation and volvulus has sort of gained synonymous meaning for pet owners with bloat, not the same thing. Gastric dilatation and volvulus, a true and dire emergency, the stomach bloats or dilates and then twists. And the problem there is that the gas and the fluids cannot escape, tissue dies, very bad situation. Bloat itself can also be dangerous, but a very, very small percentage of the time.
So typically bloat is how you and I feel after we've had Christmas dinner and we ate too much.
Yeah, and especially if whatever we ate was maybe, you know, mixed with something fermentable and, you know, we're getting it's super uncomfortable, painful. You can actually see a very hard, expanded abdomen on your dog. And a lot of times, fortunately, when people bring their dogs in and are concerned that they're actually having GDV, they just have bloat, and that's pretty easy to deal with most of the time. But certainly gastric dilatation and volvulus, the more serious condition of the stomach twisting, is very common. I'd say in 17 years I've seen hundreds and hundreds of cases. And it is definitely something that dog owners of all breeds, but particularly certain breeds, and you mentioned Dobermans as one, and I agree, should be very aware of.
Well, I know that most dogs aren't drinking beer. So what seems to be the cause of them getting this start off with bloat?
Well, you know, it's a fabulous question because I have to tell you truthfully that until I did some deeper research from my recent article that I wrote on prevention and of bloat, I didn't realize that the common theme that we've always cited to pet owners of don't let your dog eat a large meal and then run around and exercise, which is similar to the don't swim after eating, you know, concept in humans, has actually never been proven to be a risk factor for GDV. So we'll say GDV, and what we mean is gastric, bloat, and volvulus, the more emergent condition. So GDV is just the easier way to say it. That was super interesting to me because it makes sense to me. Don't eat a big meal and then run around. Probably actually really logic dictates that a big meal would weigh the stomach down and make it super unlikely to be able to twist on its axis. So it's kind of amusing. So some risk factors that we do definitely know are important, and there is a fairly long list, are deep-chested conformation. So that's where the breed predisposition comes in. And I will say to you that the very first three GDBs that I did surgery on right out of vet school were a Shih Tzu, a Schnauzer, and a Lhasa Apso. So
they're not the ones we typically think of, yeah.
Not at all. And so by no means should we make an assumption that any breed is not at risk. But definitely large breed dogs that typically have deep-chested conformation, Dobermans, Great Danes, German Shepherds, Mastiffs, even Dalmatians. I mean, you start thinking about these dogs, what they look like, their deep-chestedness, the narrowness of their front of their body puts them at risk, and that's just an anatomical fact. Feeding one large meal daily, now that is not so much because of the amount of the meal as it is that if it's a larger meal than splitting it up into two meals, because there's a little bit more food in there, it might move out of the stomach more slowly, and there's a higher chance that it will actually ferment, make gas, bloat the stomach, and then it will twist. Interestingly, having a first-degree relative, so a sibling or a parent that has had the same condition, is a high-risk factor. Having had the spleen removed for some reason before the event occurs, and that would be pretty unusual, but certainly, you know, if you have a dog that's had a splenectomy, hopefully it got a prophylactic gastropexy, which we're going to discuss, I know, at that time.
So
having a low
hit by a car, for instance, and the spleen was damaged.
Great example. So it had
your, okay.
That's a really good example. And I was thinking more along the lines of sometimes we do it for autoimmune diseases, which would be far less frequent than being hit by a car. So that's a great example. Having a low body condition score, that just means being thin. And usually it's being thin in addition to being deep-chested. And that doesn't mean pathologically thin. It could just be lean, like a greyhound, for example, typically thin dogs.
But I would have to say, Dr. Luce, right now, about people now hearing that going, see, my dog should be fat because then it's not going to get bloat. It's not going to get this
GPD. Point.
Yeah, but in actuality, being overweight has all of its own problems associated with it. So keep it
that's very true.
Optimal weight.
And I don't think we'd decrease the risk. Yeah, I agree completely. So let's not go to the opposite extreme for sure. Being a boy, so being male, and I don't know that anybody has any idea why this would be true, seems to be statistically associated, and eating too fast, having a stressed out temperament, being a high anxiety dog, elevated feeding, which many people do with larger breed dogs for a variety of reasons, water restriction, which again goes to how the food's digested more slowly. The longer it's in the stomach, the more likely it is to ferment and cause increased gas and bloat and then potentially volvulus.
Elevating the dish helps or doesn't help?
It's a risk factor for GDD.
So elevate, we used to say elevate the dish, it'll be better. It's more normal,
exactly.
So the food goes straight down. Interesting. Thank you.
Exactly. And if I had to think about why, I would think that perhaps it might have something to do with the ingestion of air while eating. But honestly, can't say for sure that anybody knows that either. So we mentioned water restriction as being a risk factor, but interestingly, moistening dry food is also a statistical increased risk factor. And so that's something I think we've all talked about doing to help with digestion of dry kibble. That, in fact, may not be a great idea. So older dogs, dogs over 7 years of age, the larger the breed, the younger you are when you're geriatric. So a Great Dane at 7 is a geriatric dog, whereas a Dalmatian at 10 or 11 would be a geriatric dog. So all of those things, and certainly combinations of things, and then one of the most interesting and most scientific studies was done for now 5 years ago. If you are feeding a dry diet, which many, many people, of course, are, and that diet has any kind of fat listed in the first four ingredients, which most dry diets do, that has an increased risk association with GDV. So doesn't mean, of course, that if you have any one of these things happening with your dog, it's going to have a GDV. It just means that your dog is at higher risk than a dog that doesn't have that specific thing going on.
So there's a lot of these potential contributing factors that probably every pet owner who has a dog goes, oh, okay, well, it's older and okay, it's this and that. So as you're saying, any breed, any age can really have this. How about grains? That's one thing that I had heard, that foods that were high in grain or particular types of grain may cause an animal to be more prone to having this GDV.
Yes, and I have read that anecdotally and heard that at conferences, and I think that's just been a generally discussed factor. And what I did find, again, in researching for this specific article was that there has been no study that has proven that grains actually are a risk factor. I think that probably the logic behind that supposition was that they're fermentable. So higher in carbohydrates does not seem to be a statistically significant risk factor.
So it may be an urban legend.
I think so. And there are many surrounding this condition, as we've already discussed some.
So you're looking at your dog, and it kind of has that roundish look, like maybe it ate too much. What are some of the other symptoms that a pet owner says, I can watch this, or no, it's time to go in and see Dr. Luce at the emergency clinic tonight?
That's right. That's right. Well, I think this is a great question, and probably the only good thing about this condition is it's usually pretty textbook in its presentation. So I think it can be very easy for owners to quickly identify, especially if they're already aware of it. And certainly seeing a dog with a very distended abdomen would be later than I would hope that they would notice something else was going on. For example, I think the very first sign would typically be that your dog is restless, and that's discomfort as the gas distension starts to occur. It hurts. I mean, most of us have had, you know, as you pointed out, a too large Thanksgiving dinner at some point in our past. It's really, really uncomfortable. And so they won't lie down, or they'll whine, or act hunched. And that would be what I'd call a prodromal or early sign of more serious things that will start to occur. Retching, particularly non-productive retching. So if your dog looks like it's trying to vomit and is not bringing anything up, or is bringing up white foamy material, which is saliva, cannot get into the stomach from the esophagus because the stomach's twisted, and human beings produce 3 gallons of saliva a day. So, which astounds me. So if you can extrapolate that to a dog, you know, by weight, for example, a lot of saliva in a short period of time that cannot escape the esophagus, so it has to come back up. So they're retching up this white, foamy, there's no food in it, there's no bile or yellow tinge to it, and that's called non-productive retching or non-productive vomiting. That's a very classic symptom. Certainly, if you touch your dog's abdomen and it's hard or feels what we call tympanic, like a tight, tight balloon, not good. You've reached a point at that time where you really need to be getting in your car. And I think those are the most common signs. And what we hear the most on the phone when people call is, my dog's been trying to vomit and nothing's coming up. That is by far the most classic thing that an owner will describe.
And that's when you say, please, get your pet in here. Right. Don't keep watching it. I know you've watched it for all the day, and now the pet is looking
hopefully
worse.
Not, right. Yeah.
It's not going to get better on its own. Don't wait.
That's right.
We are going to have to wait for how do we take care of this now, and how do you truly diagnose it after we have this short commercial break. So stay tuned. We're talking right now to Dr. Kim Luce, who's telling us about gastric dilatation and volvulus, a condition in dogs, I'll have to see if it's in cats, that can be life-threatening. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PETMEDS. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PETMEDS, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, DOCTOR, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to florop.com and use the code DR20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com, code word DOCTOR and the number 20.
You ask the question, what do I want? What do I need? I'll take affection. I really should mention, I need time. I need love. I crave attention.
They are my friends. Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter. Available in iTunes.
Hi, this is Tim Link, host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Join me as we feature interviews with best-selling pet-related authors, award-winning writers, journalists, and bloggers. And we'll tell stories about the animals and interesting topics about the animals in our lives. Each of the interviews will give you a first-hand knowledge about why the authors and writers chose a particular story, what the feature animals meant to them, and what has become of those animals that we've talked about. And of course, I'll also share stories from my own books, blogs, articles, and experiences. So be sure to join me and the writers and authors on Animal Rights.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
So, Dr. Luz, I don't think I have ever seen a cat with gastric dilatation and volvulus. Can kitties get it?
Yeah, I think kitties can get it. I think it's extremely rare. And I suspect that if you saw a cat with gastric dilatation and volvulus, there would be an unusual predisposing cause. And the thing that would come first to my mind would be a tumor, perhaps on the spleen or somewhere else in the cranial abdomen that might actually haul the stomach over into a twisted fashion. Cats just don't seem to suffer the same degree of gas production that dogs do, and I think that's probably a major factor. Their diet is different, and you pointed out the grain question before. I think cat diets are lower in carbohydrates typically and higher in proteins. Could that be a factor? I don't think anybody studied that, but you know, again, based on the fact that we had discussed grains for so long in dogs. And I think dogs can have this happen too, a splenic tumor. You know, when an older dog comes in, I'm always speaking with owners if the dog has GDV about the possibility there may be something even more serious than the current condition going on in the abdomen that caused it. But no, I can't even remember a colleague mentioning that they've seen one in a cat. Doesn't seem like it could be impossible.
Maybe because cats also don't typically gulp their food down like dogs can and all the rest of it. So it's an emergency clinic. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. The technician is saying, okay, Dr. Luce, here's another one. How do you confirm that this pet has a torsion? The stomach has flipped on itself. And where do you go from there?
Well, that's a great question. What you're asking me is how do I decide very quickly? Because it must be decided very quickly. It's a per acute problem. And as you pointed out, sometimes people have been watching and, you know, it's not always easy at 2 o'clock in the morning to convince yourself that your dog has to go to the emergency clinic or that you should even call. So we need to decide once it's in the door very rapidly whether it's an actual GDV or is it just a bloat, meaning what we would typically call a food bloat. They're just distended and need to be, usually we induce vomiting actually to address that situation. The very quickest way is to take a radiograph or an x-ray in a certain position, and it is typically diagnostic based on the shape of the stomach. We really typically only need one view to be sure. Usually I'll get them both because it's very quick to do, and sometimes the one view is not enough. But that tells us right away, and the beauty of having digital radiography, which more and more veterinarians are getting, is that that is so fast now. I can have a dog in and out of radiology in 3 minutes and have an answer. If it's a GDV, then a certain course of action is begun. If it's just a bloat, as I said, we're all breathing a great sigh of relief at that point and then thinking about how to make that animal more comfortable, which usually can be done by inducing vomiting.
So you've taken the radiograph and you have this thing in the upper abdomen that usually has these two big bloated round balls and it's kind of squished in the middle. And I look at that going, oh, no, here we go. We have to do surgery. Because there's really nothing in between. It's surgery or dog heaven, correct?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I think that that's a fair general statement. And I would rather leave people with that statement because I think that anything we can do to induce people to take the situation seriously in a sort of emergent fashion is all good. But the truth is that some small percentage of dogs can be tubed or have a tube passed from their mouth down the esophagus into the stomach, even though they are twisted. And I remember very clearly being told very clearly in vet school by the surgeons on the surgery service that the ability to pass that tube in the stomach did not rule out volvulus or GDV, and that you shouldn't use it to get a false sense of security that you don't need to go to surgery. That said, if air can escape from that tube and you can decompress the stomach, occasionally the stomach will flip back into its normal position and you've lucked out and the animal doesn't need surgery. The problem with those few cases, and they are few, I would say less than 5% of GDVs can be dealt with that way successfully, you still could have compromised stomach tissue. You still could have an immediate recurrence. You haven't removed whatever caused the actual bloating in the first place. It might still be in there and not able to pass through, so it might happen again. So really, definitively, surgery is the recommendation, and immediate, like as fast as you can, you know, safely get the animal in. Sometimes they need to be stabilized with fluids, and of course they need pain medication and things like that. But while you have your team doing that, there's hopefully another team available to you setting up your surgery table so you can go right in, because it's definitive therapy and there's no substitute for getting in there and looking at that stomach and looking at the spleen and is there anything else wrong in the abdomen and all that, and putting it back in place.
I think one of the hardest bits of information that I need to give an owner in a situation is your dog is presented, I've taken my radiograph. Yes, it has all the hallmarks of having a volvulus, the stomach having flipped on itself. Yes, we need to do surgery. Hopefully the animal comes through surgery well. But even after that, your pet may still succumb to this. Why?
Well, that's a great question too. And unfortunately, it isn't as simple as untwisting the stomach and sewing things back up. Because when the stomach bloats, and this is why bloat itself without volvulus carries a mortality or risk of death percentage of about 2-3%, some sources say a little bit higher. When the stomach dilates that big like a balloon, the blood vessels that supply it are flattened. And there can be no oxygen delivery to the tissues of the stomach if the blood vessels are flattened. So the longer that occurs, the more likely you are to have cell death and tissue death. And even just compromise of the tissue, say we get in and it looks a little purple when you'd like it to look pink, so you give it a little bit of time, you've untwisted, you've explored the abdomen, things are looking good, and then you look again at the stomach and, well, now it's pink, so that's great. That means you don't have to remove any portion of it. That's definitely a positive outcome surgically. That tissue still was deprived of oxygen for a period of time. And so when the oxygen flow is returned, you can have all kinds of sort of cellular breakdowns and physiologic events that can occur that will cause derangements in the body's chemistry that can ultimately lead to very critical problems like clotting issues or either not clotting properly the blood or clotting too much the blood, or some of these animals will be down and get aspiration pneumonia. There are just many, many things. And unfortunately, there is still a high risk factor of mortality after the surgery successfully occurs. You usually can somewhat predict that based on what you see during surgery. But not perfectly. I've seen situations where everything just goes beautifully and the spleen gets to stay in the dog. Sometimes they have to come out because they're compromised by the twists that go with the stomach. They're attached and just say, boy, I feel really great about that. And it doesn't end up the way you expect. And then the converse can occur as well. It looks terrible. We have to remove diseased tissue. The spleen has to come out. Surgery was 3 hours long. It got pneumonia, but guess what? In a week and a half, it goes home feeling great. So it is no guarantee. And unfortunately, is an expensive proposition as well. And because a lot of these dogs, as we talked about, are older, it can be a very, very difficult conversation to have, upsetting to present to an owner, certainly very upsetting for an owner, and a tough decision to make under pressure.
Because it's 2 o'clock in the morning, yes. Here's a situation, if it is your daytime veterinarian, then typically you developed a relationship with this doctor and yes. You can do the pros and the cons. And yes, doc, you know, it's 14 years of age versus going into the emergency clinic. Oh, well, I don't know you. And are you really just trying to get money out of me or is this important?
Right.
Do I need to do this? Speaking of money, and I know it'll vary throughout the United States, but say a typical surgery to go ahead and untwist the whole lead-in. Emergency clinic, I need the diagnostics, I do the surgery, and post-operative care. Can you give me an estimate, our listeners, an estimate about how much this they may need to invest in their pet's health?
Sure. I think that it's very fair to say that an uncomplicated outcome, meaning the animal's home in 48 hours, nothing more complicated during surgery than untwisting the stomach and then doing the gastropexy and closing up, and the dog does great and feels so much better and goes home. I think that anywhere in the country you're looking at a minimum of probably about $5,000. And I think that if there are even small complications, or I think having lived on the East Coast for a very long time and grown up there and now having been in California for 6 years, I can say that this area tends to be a little bit more costly, Southern California and even Northern California. It could certainly approach $8,000 uncomplicated if you have critical care complications afterwards. I've seen dogs leave the hospital or not, unfortunately, with bills of upwards of $15,000. So it can be extraordinarily costly and especially impactful in tough economic times.
So now we say, okay, I have one of these breeds that's more prone to having it, and it's a male. Wow, what can I do to try to prevent this problem? So you're talking a little bit earlier on about gastropexy. Please describe what that is and when to do it, what it is.
Right. Well, this is the very best thing that we could talk about during this whole conversation, and that is that GDV is highly preventable. And the reason that it's highly preventable is that this procedure called gastropexy exists. And what gastropexy is if you think of the stomach as a sack, then on the tail end of the sac, where the food heads out of the stomach into the small intestine to move on down through the digestive process, is the area called the pylorus. It's sort of the gatekeeper for letting food out of the stomach. And when it's functioning properly and things are in their proper place, it does that perfectly well. If the stomach twists, then food can't get out of that gate. So that's what we want to prevent. Ideally, we'd prevent bloating. That's difficult. Some animals are just prone to it, but we can prevent twisting. And the way that we do that is we actually attach that area of the stomach called the pylorus to the body wall, the inside of the actual body wall of the animal. So if you felt your rib cage at the lowest part, and you imagined the inside of that, inside your abdomen, and I know it's tough, you know, it seems so easy for us because we've seen it with our own eyes so many times, but it's tough when you've never seen your own insides, but there is a nice flat area there where you can literally suture the pylorus, the outer layers of that tissue, to the body wall. When and if you have a bloat that occurs, then the stomach cannot flip over. It is 95%. Probably close to 98%. Again, different sources give you slightly different percentages, but obviously very, very effective, even at 95%, at preventing volvulus, and therefore very, very effective at preventing all the complications and expenses and drama and trauma that can occur. And we always do it if we do surgery on a dog with GDV. So when we derotate the stomach and put things back where they're supposed to be we do a gastropexy. We attach the pylorus to the side of the body wall because we don't want it to occur again. We already know that it's occurred once, and by definition, that makes it more likely to occur again. Things have stretched that shouldn't have. And I would say, unless the animal were remarkably unstable under anesthesia, that would be the only situation in which I could condone skipping that procedure. It's the universally accepted that it's done at that time. So someone at some point thought, well, great, why not do it sooner? And that was just a brilliant turn of events, because now what we can do is, usually at the age of spay or neutering, we can do this same exact procedure, a gastropexy. It's done exactly the same way, but it's termed a prophylactic gastropexy because it's a preventative procedure. And it also will decrease the risk of GDD by 95 to 98%. It's phenomenally simple to do. It's a very safe procedure, not completely risk-free, and we can discuss that. It's not particularly expensive. It can be associated with the spaying of your female dog, so you're already in the abdomen anyway. A little bit tougher with a male, because when we neuter males, we typically don't enter the abdomen, but that's still no reason to feel hesitant to do it, because it's just a wonderful insurance policy against the occurrence of this ever happening in this dog's lifetime. And it's certainly, I can't even think of a single situation which I've entered the abdomen surgically for another reason, and I know that there's been a pexy done, which I've seen it break down. They seem to take very well. I think probably it's a fairly technically simple procedure. So I think with a little bit of practice, people become very skilled at it, do it properly, and it just goes very well and does its job very nicely. So it's a wonderful procedure to do.
So it sounds as though if I am a dog owner, and it really doesn't matter what age, what size of pet, when you go in, if your pet needs to go into for some type of abdominal surgery, say, excuse me, besides the nail trim, can you also consider doing a gastropexy so I don't have to worry about this?
Absolutely. And I would say that at this time, and it's becoming more and more true, sort of ubiquitously true amongst general practitioners, that especially with female dogs, and hopefully, you know, it's sort of a psychological, I think, wall with male dogs. I mean, there's really no reason to say when you have a male dog under anesthesia for neutering, you shouldn't go ahead and do this procedure. It's just kind of tough psychologically because you're not already in there. But I would say try to overcome that, whether you're an owner or a veterinarian and it's giving you any pause. I mean, that's just the time to do it for sure. Typically at 6 months of age, although it can be done sooner, and wouldn't be wrong at any point in any dog's life to do the procedure. And often when I see people on emergency basis for any other reason, in fact, it's funny you said the nail trim, because I saw a dog with a broken toenail last night, and it was a 2 or 3 year old Great Dane. And I just asked the gentleman if he'd had that done when she was spayed, and he said nobody'd heard of it. And I said, I really encourage you to ask your veterinarian about getting it done now, and maybe take this dew claw off at the same time so it doesn't tear again. And he was just very excited when he left, because we had talked about it and what good it could do. It's a highly accessible procedure, and more and more vets are suggesting it, and more vets are becoming comfortable with performing it. And if your vet's not, that's fine. That's not a problem. They can often refer you to a veterinarian that is comfortable, and certainly any board-certified surgeon in private practice or academia, if you live up near the vet school at Davis, could definitely do this procedure. So it's very accessible.
Well, Dr. Kim Luce, this has been some fascinating information that can hopefully save many a pet's life. So be aware of the signs. If your dog has that big bloated tummy and you touch it and it almost feels like a drum, that can be very definitely a medical emergency. Don't wait. Take that pet in, either to your daytime veterinarian or to an emergency clinic. Dr. Luce, thank you so much for being with us today.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me again.
Well, what we plan to do here on The Pet Doctor is to inform you of ways that you can be the best pet owner that you can be. Please stay tuned for more information on Pet Life Radio and listen in next week. We'll have more information to make you the best pet owner you can be. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.